Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy. It is, as ever, Selection Sunday, or as you listen to this, probably Monday morning. And we start with North Carolina coach Joe Bresci, who in addition to being the coach of the number one seed Tar Heels, was also a member of the five-person selection committee. Coach Bresci, despite the fact that your team has been off for a little bit more than a week, you've had a busy week as you have deciphered through all of this data, but we are going to hone in on your Tar Heels. How do you describe this team's growth over the course of this season?
You know, Terry, it's been amazing. I think, first of all, congratulations to all the teams that got in, but congratulations to just lacrosse in general for the student athletes, the coaches, the support staff, the medical group that helped these student athletes get through a season for the most part. You know, I know it's had its peaks and valleys, but it's been a wild ride. And I know for us in particular, you know, we had some bumps in the road with COVID in January and February. And, you know, you just kind of, you know, buckled your seatbelt and went to work every day. And, you know, I often said that the biggest challenge was the COVID test every Tuesday, Thursday that we had prior to a weekend game. So I really credit the young men who, you know, came to work. They had fun. They enjoyed it. They enjoyed their experience, and they just they didn't take special for granted. And that's the experience that they're having. And every day in practice was like a game in a sense, because we were able to get the practice, and then the games were just a bonus on the weekend. So really credit our guys. Our coaching staff did a great job, but our medical staff deserves the MVP award of the season.
So understanding that getting to the games is equivalent to winning, you also did win 12 out of the 14, including very meaningfully your season finale against Duke, which won you a share of the ACC championship and more likely than not contributed to being the number one overall seed. How do you reflect on the on-field success of this team and how it prepares you for hopefully a run in May?
You know, I give a lot of credit to Coach Metz and Coach Unterstein and Coach Fox, who did a terrific job of just really preparing the guys each week. And, you know, the ACC is obviously the toughest conference in the country. And, you know, we knew each week it was going to be tough. We were able to get in, you know, for the most part, our out-of-conference games. We played Big East, from the Big East, Denver, early in the season, and then the entire SoCon, including Coach Torpy's High Point team. I think we ended up playing them three times. We scrimmaged them once and played them twice in a regular season, not knowing if we were going to get our games in. And then when you get to the ACC, it was just, you know, it was a grind. I think six of our last seven games were with ACC opponents, and everybody's so talented, so deep. With grad students and returning guys. And I'm just so proud of the way we put forth a great effort. Sure, there were bumps in the roads, but when you're playing a conference like we do in the ACC, it's a daunting task each week. And I give our guys a lot of credit for, you know, coming out and winning a share of the ACC championship with a terrific Duke team.
And as you look forward, you get to host not only your matchup versus Monmouth, but also another first-round matchup in Chapel Hill. What does it mean to the Triangle area to have two first-round games, and what do you know about Coach Brian Fisher's team?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, the fact that we are home. It's a credit to our guys for earning that opportunity, which is great. We're also going to have Duke come over. They're going to play High Point in the area, so all of us are pretty familiar with each other, which is great. But you know, I think the from a Monmouth standpoint, you know, obviously just getting selected about a half hour ago, it's, you know, we're doing our homework, we're downloading film, and we're going to find out a bunch. But anytime you play a championship team from any conference, you have the utmost respect for them being champions. And for us, it's really focusing on how we can get ourselves better this week in preparation. for Monmouth. And, you know, I know they're well coached. I know they're well schooled in everything they do. Very good at the faceoff X. Their defense is one of the best in the country. So, you know, we're going to have our work cut out for us, and we're going to do a great job of preparing and, you know, hopefully put our best foot forward on Saturday.
Well, Coach Joe Bresci, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Have a great week of practice. Enjoy it. I know that so many coaches have said over the course of the last couple weeks that just the opportunity to be with your team for 72, 48 hours longer, whatever it is reward enough, and certainly getting to continue to ratchet up the competition runs right along with that. So thank you for joining us on the podcast, and good luck going forward.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Towson Athletic Director Tim Leonard, the chair of the NCAA Division I Men's Championship Committee, who handled the process of selecting the 16-team tournament field in this very unique 2021 college lacrosse season. He's been kind enough to speak to Inside Lacrosse a couple times over the course of the last several weeks leading up to this moment. But Mr. Leonard, the conversation always begins in the same place. There are three hinge points when it comes to bracket selection this year, two rows above the third. The first team in, last team out, and the number one overall seed. So let's start with the first team in and the last team out, or I should say the last team in and the first team out. What were those choices? How did it come down, and what was the kind of factors that led to your decisions?
Yeah, it was, boy, it was really, really hard. And I do feel really, really bad for Army. I mean, it was so close, and it really came down to the final two spots. And we had three teams, and, you know, we couldn't even, usually we have the field pretty much set on Saturday. You know, some of them might be depending on who wins tomorrow, this scenario, that scenario, but we couldn't even get that done Saturday night. And we just kept talking and talking and talking. It's all we talked about was Army, Syracuse, Loyola. Obviously, Lehigh was in that discussion, but they got the AQ. And it was just so hard. Army had a great win over Syracuse. And head-to-head usually trumps. And early on, it did. That's who we were leaning with. And then we just kept going back to that Syracuse schedule and the two wins over Virginia. But they didn't help themselves with some of their losses where they got pounded. But yet they beat UVA twice and another tournament team. Why was my mind is forgetting. It's slipping now who that even was.
Well, but they beat Vermont.
You know, Vermont. Yes, thank you. You know, Syracuse challenged. I mean, you got to hand it to them, right? They went out and played some tough non-conference games. And so we did want to try to reward them for that, but they just had more quality wins, and Loyola had the most quality wins of any of those teams, of those in that grouping. They had four really good wins, but it was, man, it was tough. It really was tough.
One of the things about the process that I feel like the public doesn't necessarily understand is the duration of work. You know, in a typical year, this starts in early April and runs for 4 or 5 weeks. This year, maybe it started a little bit later than a typical year. But one of the things that really stands out about Loyola's inclusion is that they did so much work in the last 11 days. I think it's fair to say that on the morning of April 29th, before they beat Georgetown, they weren't even really in the conversation. And then subsequently they beat a top 10 team, and then they added two top 20 wins, one over Navy last Tuesday, one over Army on Friday, in order to really create a robust resume, add three quality wins to that early season Navy win that you mentioned, rounded out that four-win group. What was it like tracking Loyola's progress over the course of the last 2 weeks?
Yet, no question. Obviously, their schedule favored them a little bit down the stretch, and then they did what they had to do. They won those games. But yeah, you're right. When we started this process, they really weren't in the discussion about a team to watch for. I mean, it was always, well, somebody had a win over Loyola. That's a good win, because we know that's a historically a good program, but it was always about the other team, not necessarily about Loyola. And then, like you mentioned, down the stretch, boy, they started doing what they needed to do. They got some good wins, beating Army, obviously, in their conference tournament, beating Georgetown right before the tournament, a win against a strong Navy, beat Navy twice. You know, they really did some impressive things in the last couple of weeks. It's disappointing. Obviously, we really were looking forward to that Lehigh-Loyola game today. But, you know, it's COVID. It is what it is.
And how do you think that game might have impacted the field were it to have happened? And probably most pointedly, is it possible that if Loyola had beaten Lehigh, Army would have gotten in over the Mountain Hawks, or was the gap too wide there?
No, I think it probably would have been about the same, simply because Lehigh had beaten Army and Lehigh had gone undefeated. You know, the thing that was just, it was that we had a hard time with Lehigh was that big game they had, whatever that was, a week and a half ago against Villanova, and Villanova thumped them pretty good. That was the hard part on Lehigh, but you know, they had beaten Army, Navy, Loyola. They beat everybody in the Patriot League. And, you know, we've got, a couple of teams in there this year from the Patriots. So we know it's a good league. It's always a good league. It certainly is at the top end in particular. And Lehigh, you know, they won all those games. So
I mentioned there are three hinge points, the second being the number one seed. I don't think people are surprised that North Carolina is number one. It's not a huge surprise that Duke is number two. Maryland slipping to three, and the way in which Maryland and Rutgers were probably supposed to be treated relatively equivalently, in the sense that their numbers were going to be skewed in a similar direction. Maryland at 12-0. Probably better than their RPI suggested at number six. Rutgers at 8-3, despite the fact that they had a disappointing Big Ten semifinal loss to Johns Hopkins, probably better than their RPI represented as well. How did the committee talk about the Big Ten teams?
It was hard. I mean, just the whole season was hard to evaluate when you don't have the really deep data that we have access to in normal years. And you know, if you're looking at it, I mean, we really didn't get into, well, is that a top five win, is that a top 10 win, because you don't know what really a top five team is or top 10 based on RPI, right? I mean, it just, so you got to throw that out. We did have it kind of broken down into groupings. That's a quality win. That's got to be a top 20 win. But, you know, and if you looked at that, the Big Ten didn't have anybody in those categories except Rutgers and Maryland. And it was just hard to tell and really hard to evaluate. And again, that was one of those we went round and round on. Those were, you know, like you had mentioned, those are the things we spent most of our time on, is who were those last couple teams in, and then who is number one. And I think at the end of the day, what we really decided on was we can't base it solely on an eye test, right? And that's what it was with Maryland. It was just an eye test. And the ACC definitely went out and did a lot to help themselves this year. I mean, there's no question that's why they have those as many teams in, all five in, because they played a lot of non-conference games. And again, I get it. It's COVID. People made decisions based on things outside of competition. But when it came time to how do we evaluate, it was much easier to evaluate
ACC teams than it was Big Ten teams, and that's the bottom line. I mean, Maryland may very well be the best team in the tournament, but we just didn't feel like we had enough quality data to make that decision to make them number one. And the one thing we did know was that Carolina and Duke played a tremendous schedule this year in a league that certainly appeared to be the by far and away the best in the country this year. And we gave the nod to Carolina simply based on the fact that the last time they played Duke, they got the win. So,
but it sounds like Rutgers was comfortably in.
I wouldn't say comfortably in, but they weren't in that last three that we were looking at for the two spots.
Got it.
But yeah, we had about five teams that you knew, okay, they're in. That's not going to take a lot of discussion about it. They're in. And then the last couple, then it got a little tougher, but the last two in particular just came down to those three teams. And unfortunately it just didn't go Army's way.
Sure. So circling back to Loyola, obviously their game against Lehigh was canceled due to a positive COVID test that subsequent reporting suggests might not be as serious, for lack of a better word, as originally thought, as the remainder of the team did not test positive. Are there contingencies in place with respect to a replacement team? We saw that exist in the hockey bracket. Is there any possibility of a team replacing not just the Greyhounds, but any team that would have a COVID issue should it arise, say, before Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yes, absolutely. You know, they'll all have to test tomorrow, and then they will have, they've got 24 hours from, you know, when we announced it at 9 o'clock. So 9 o'clock tomorrow. And if there's any issues, we've got the next four teams ready to go. And we've notified them, told them to be ready, you know, stay in your protocol in case something happens. So
I mentioned the three hinge points, the third not being as significant this year as four predetermined sites host the eight first round games. But Lehigh as the number eight seed represented a small surprise. Can you characterize the hinge point in that 7, 8, 9, 10 range, and why, say, the Pioneers at number seven and Mountain Hawks at number eight ended up getting the edge?
Yeah, I mean, it was so hard because you don't have specific data points. And so you're just looking at the number of quality wins that Lehigh had from the Patriot League, right?
Right.
Going undefeated in there, that means you're beating a Loyola team that we were really high on, beating Navy, who we felt like was a pretty solid team. Obviously, Army, that very easily could be a tournament team. They're definitely a tournament type team. And so, you know, it's just all those things. They're so good at the face off. They've got, you know, a lot of good things going for them. And so that's really why we went with Lehigh in that final seed.
Well, Mr. Leonard, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. We know that this was both not a traditional exercise and also not an easy exercise in so many different ways. It feels like just yesterday we were talking about, where are you guys going to host these first round games? So yeoman's work getting from that point to this, and good luck both in terms of executing and also enjoying the 15 games that are in store over the course of the next three weekends.
Hey, thank you so much, and always enjoy talking with you, and we appreciate all the information you're putting out there, the stories you write, because these are some really impressive young men that are out there playing, and it's fun to watch them.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with High Point head coach John Torpy, whose Panthers are back in the NCAA tournament by virtue of defeating the Richmond Spiders on Friday to claim the SoCon championship and automatic qualifier. They take on the Duke Blue Devils in the first round of the NCAA tournament, a team that they are well familiar with and beat in 2019. Coach Torpy, congratulations. How do you describe your team's growth to get to this point?
Thanks, Terry. Thanks for having me on. It's a senior laden team that's incredibly player driven, and to watch these guys over the last couple weeks, you know, as we got kind of through SoCon play, we changed a couple things in terms of how we were attacking, when we were attacking on the clock, and their maturation and growth has been exceptional. It's just been a lot of fun. It's just a blessing. I mean, being able to coach this time of year is such a gift. And to have another week with our guys is going to be a lot of fun.
So this is the second time that your team has been in the NCAA tournament. What lessons will you apply from that first trip? Obviously, the playing game situation made it for a quicker turnaround. But clearly, in terms of the notion of playing in May, it's just a little bit different. How do you try to instill that into Monday's practice, for example?
Yeah, I think the first time having the play-in game and you know, having to do the quick turnaround to Wednesday, that was a challenge. You know, we had always done things in the early part of the season with some of the ACC games that we play with turnarounds. But the fact that this one's going to be a week, I mean, we've got a couple more days than we've been used to having, you know, having the game on Sunday at 5. We're excited. I mean, it's going to be like a normal practice week for us, and that's the way we're going to treat it. And, you know, again, a great opponent, but opponent we know pretty well. And it should be a fun week, honestly.
Your team has changed and grown a lot over the course of this season. And I think that was evidenced by your first meeting versus Richmond versus your second. You have maybe slowed down a little bit offensively when the situations call for it. You have reduced the turnovers offensively. And it seems like it's really brought out the best of Asher Nolting and his compatriots when it comes to their efficiency at that end. I know that it's early. You've gotten less than an hour to digest your first round matchup, but what does that mean for the game plan when you take on a team that you met in early March and it was pretty one-sided in Durham?
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think, you know, at that point in the season for us, when we're talking about February and early March games, we always say we're a work in progress team. We're still trying to figure out what schemes are going to be best for us. We're still trying to figure out, you know, what personnel are going to give us the best opportunity to succeed late in the season. And I really think that Richmond game, the VMI and the Richmond game, those first two SoCon games, gave us a lot of really good answers. And, you know, I think when we've had that balanced attack and we've allowed both ends of the ball to be at their very best, you know, the offense is taking care of the ball, eliminating the turnovers and taking the ball a little bit deeper in the shot clock. And, you know, the defense, a little bit more well-rested. We played some some strong complementary lacrosse. I think, you know, our first UNC game is a great example of that. And the opportunity that we had against UVA out there was a great opportunity with that too. So just continuing to grow, playing that style. Our guys have done a great job adapting to that. And I think, you know, a lot of people saw that this past weekend in the SoCon semis and the SoCon finals.
I want to end big picture. I'm going to try to strike an emotional chord here. When you reflect on your tenure with the Panthers and think about how many difficult defeats were required to get to this point, who are the folks that stand out as deserving credit and the folks that you want to thank for helping this program get to this position?
I mean, first and foremost, my staff and all of our former players. I mean, I've had an opportunity to have a hand in every single guy that we've, you know, had on our team and a part of our staff. And we've never compromised our morals to bring someone in here that's going to, you know, pull the program in a poor direction. And I feel blessed to coach such amazing guys and to have had a group of guys that I work with from a staff perspective that have just been remarkable and hardworking and, you know, have done everything and anything they can to help these guys grow as men, as players and as students. And then, you know, just the parents of the kids on our team. I mean, we are just so fortunate again. You know, we take a lot of time with them in the recruiting process just to get to know them and, you know, figure out if they're going to be a great fit here. And, you know, if they're going to see their growth in their son as a person first, as the number one priority, and then lacrosse after that. There's a lot of hard work that goes into that, but there's a lot of people. It's families. It's my family. It's, you know, the support we've gotten from the university, our president, the athletic director, other support staff within the department. But I mean, we're not here without so many people just caring so much about our guys and our staff and putting us in this position. So just feel so blessed and so fortunate that, you know, we're back and, you know, playing in May. I mean, we're back playing in the deeper part of May, and we're playing against an incredible opponent close to home. We'll have a great group of fans there. So it's going to be a pretty memorable experience.
John Torpy, congratulations on your team's success. Good luck preparing this week for the Blue Devils. We look forward to watching you play this weekend.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Denver coach Bill Tierney, whose Pioneers host the Loyola Greyhounds in the first round matchup. They also, in sight, will be host to Notre Dame's first round tournament game as well, as one of the four predetermined host sites for the first round of the NCAA tournament. Coach Tierney, congratulations on your season. Disappointing Big East championship game against Georgetown, but certainly a season to be proud of. How do you reflect on just navigating COVID and building out a 12-4 finish in the regular campaign, setting yourself up for a May run?
Well, thanks, Terry. It's a great question. I think it's the question when 5-10 years from now, when people look back, they'll remember who wins the whole thing, but they'll also remember the year of the COVID and how much, not just Denver kids, every student athlete in most sports, how much they had to give up. We just after the selection show, just talked to our team and thanked them for all they've done, for giving this up, and reminded them now that, you know, it's May. Don't let up now. You know, they've done so well with this. We've traveled over 30,000 miles and just really, really proud of the kids to get through it. And then certainly to, as you said, navigate the season. You know, we took that trip down to North Carolina, in early February and ended up 0-2. But, you know, I after the weekend, I didn't think at the time it was a great idea. But now as I look back, I think it turned out to really help us, you know, prepare for the season that we did. Very different season with home and home in the Big East. Certainly, you know, with Villanova and Georgetown, be having the great teams they did, and then having to play them at home and then play them away, especially Villanova on a Wednesday afternoon. I guess you could say it was a season to remember, but there were times I would like to forget. But anyway, here we are in May, and we're moving into the NCAA tournament and really proud of our guys and feel fortunate and blessed that we're in the tournament again.
And you're taking on a Loyola team that had its Patriot League championship game against Lehigh canceled due to COVID protocols, which is just kind of a remarkable bookend to this season relative to the way in which so many campaigns started, but also a team with which you have a suspended but also pretty rich history, a six-game series from 2010 to 2013 when you were ECAC rivals. A 3-3 split. You guys won three times, and the Greyhounds won three times, all in 1 year. Their national championship series or campaign in 2012. What do you know about Charlie Toomey's squad, given that you've got a couple players that were previously on it on your roster? And how do you prepare for a team that you haven't played in 8 years coming to Mile High City?
Well, it's so many. It's really a yin and yang type thing. First of all, you mentioned by name, Charlie Toomey and his staff, they get it done and they get it done right. You know, so you know darn well they're going to be prepared. They're going to be excited. They're going to be well coached and well conditioned. And the thing about Loyola teams is they always know who they are. There have been years where they've played really, really fast. There have been years where they've taken their time a little bit. But, you know, sometimes they're better defensively. Other times they're better offensively. They've had teams with superstars like Pat Spencer, and they've had teams that have been, you know, bricklayers, just every guy being the same, but just gets the job done. So we know in that regard that a Charlie Toomey team, a Loyola team, is always, always going to be, you know, a tough opponent, a tough preparation, and you know, a good, hard, clean lacrosse game. And that's on the other side, too, as far as the preparation goes, having not played them for years, in one way, it makes it harder. But with film these days and all that, we actually, on Friday night, the night before our Big East final, we were having dinner and literally watching the Army-Loyola game, just out of interest of watching those teams, because we don't get to play them that much. So, you know, in some ways it's kind of refreshing to prepare for somebody you don't know and prepare and have them prepare for somebody they don't know very well. So I'm sure everybody's going to be scrambling now, and we'll, you know, we'll try to get to know them by the end of the week.
As I mentioned, Notre Dame hosting Drexel at Denver as part of this four predetermined site plan, the Pioneers in the Notre Dame quarterfinal bracket. What does it mean to Denver from a lacrosse standpoint, the lacrosse capital of the West, as you guys have trademarked, to host not just one, but two first-round NCAA tournament games?
Well, it's really exciting, and it's, you know, I have to admit, it was a little scary, you know, walking off the field the other day, you know, after losing to a great Georgetown team, of saying, you know, we may be hosting four other teams. We were pretty confident we were in the tournament, but until you see it on the screen, you never really know. Reminds me of some of my years at Princeton. We hosted the quarterfinals a few times and we weren't in it. And I can tell you, it's not a pleasant experience. Now you come back and you've got, you've got these three great teams coming in. You know, Loyola's familiar with us. We really haven't played Notre Dame at home in a while. It's just worked out that way. We played them away in 2019. We played them in California in 2018. And so, and then we played them in the playoff game, you know, some of those other years too. I get them all mixed up, but
it's easy to get them mixed up. Yeah.
You're talking. Yeah. And then the, you know, Notre Dame's great team, and certainly to have Brian Volker and his team. You know, Brian was my assistant for my first national championship team in 1992 at Princeton. And so you've got three great teams, three great leaders, and an opportunity for the University of Denver to really showcase what a great job we'll do this weekend.
Well, Bill Cerny, we really appreciate you having you on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations once again on the 12-4 season, the number 7 seed in the NCAA tournament, and good luck as you prepare this week.
Thanks, Terry.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Rutgers head coach Brian Brecht, whose Scarlet Knights are in the NCAA tournament for the first time since the early 2000s. Coach Brecht, congratulations. After a couple years of disappointing outcomes on Selection Sunday, how do you describe the emotion that you and your team felt when you saw your name on a line?
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate you reaching out, and we're excited. You know, certainly very proud of our guys and you know, the challenges and the sacrifice and the discipline they've had to get to this spot this year, and looking forward to the challenges ahead this week. So, you know, very thankful for the opportunity that we have to continue playing in the month of May.
One of the storylines throughout the season, and certainly as bracket selection became clearer in focus, was the issue of Big Ten teams playing conference-only schedules, how it shaped the metrics that are usually used for tournament selection, and how it introduced subjectivity to the process. How do you feel like the committee interpreted Rutgers' resume?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I certainly don't know exactly what went into the interpretation, but I think, you know, having 8 Big Ten wins, you know, certainly, you know, no one is going to be able to, you know, do that moving forward. So the last 5 years that the Big Ten's been in existence, you know, the Big Ten has been either number one or number two in RPI and non-conference wins. So, you started the season with, 30 wins to be had in the Big Ten with the six teams. And, the top two teams in the Big Ten, us and Maryland, had 18 of those 30 wins. So there was only going to be 12 wins, for the other four to be able to gain. So it was certainly going to, with the competition and the rivalries between all the teams, it's certainly going to be hard to come by if you drill down and you look at it at the end of the season that we had. So, like I said, I think, the Big Ten is challenging, just like every conference is. And, all the wins are not always created equally. I remember, being on the short end of the stick a few years ago. And one of the, reasons was that, three of our wins didn't really count. So, so I do think that, playing an all Big Ten, schedule twice, certainly has made our guys battle tested. But like I said, we're fortunate and thankful for the opportunity and, looking forward to the challenges that are ahead.
I share your, and I'm not imposing that you're frustrated by it, but if you were frustrated by it, I also am frustrated by many people in this ecosystem's inability to understand basic math relative to the value of beating a quote unquote three-win Johns Hopkins team or whatever the case may be. Yes, when a league only has 30 wins at its disposal and two teams share 18 of them, then of course the remaining four teams are going to split the 12 wins. It's going to likely equal some records that aren't as impressive as potentially the team strength on the field would reflect or in a normal year would indicate. That being said, how do you feel like your team is playing now as you take on a Lehigh squad that obviously had a tumultuous weekend relative to its Patriot League championship game against Loyola being canceled? But also, and this is my favorite fact that I stumbled across on Selection Sunday, you guys have played this team dating back to 1887. I mean, lacrosse is the oldest team sport in North America, but a 130-plus-year-old rivalry is pretty special to reinvigorate in an NCAA tournament setting.
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting, and I think the the ironic part is that we're about 40 minutes away from each other, and we're going to travel 6 hours down to Charlottesville to compete. So that's that's certainly humorous a little bit, but there's been a longstanding rivalry with the two programs and the close proximity. I know over the years with us changing conferences from the Big East to the Big Ten, we've had them on the schedule before, and I think the Patriot League, has probably the most teams in any division. So it's kind of hard for weekends and dates to line up all the time. And, but certainly, like I said, I think any game, in the month of May is going to be challenging. And, we're certainly excited for this opportunity. I'm proud of our guys, and, it was a fun night tonight, and, looking forward to getting started on the work week tomorrow.
Obviously, you have been through Selection Sunday before, but not everybody on your team has. I thought that when your team was shown on screen reacting to its name getting called, there was more emotion than with anyone else. What was it like to talk to the guys after they had the certainty of the ability to play in mid-May? What did you hear from them?
Yeah, I think, not so much what they said. You can just see in their eyes, their faces, their mannerisms, the demeanor. I think they were very happy. They were young men, kids, growing up, that excitement they have to play a sport they love and to be able to, get a chance to do something that, they haven't had before. Very, very happy for the seniors. We have a lot of seniors, Adam Shalambides and Kieran Mullins, Garrett Bullitt, you know, all 7-6 fifth year guys that have, you know, been a big part of the process to get us here. And collectively, you know, our older guys have been through a lot, our juniors and seniors, and, you know, what a great opportunity for the freshmen and the sophomores too, to have this experience, you know, with everything else that's going on with COVID. It's just a happy, you know, story and an opportunity, and you know, it's just the start, and you know, we're excited to start this journey tomorrow.
And to end, one of the elements of this is bringing in Colin and Connor Kirst and a couple other fifth-year senior transfers. All that has gone to get to this point in terms of developing this program, what does it mean for you? How do you reflect on this moment personally in terms of the way in which your career has developed and led to this moment?
Well, I'm you know, certainly very thankful and proud to be the head coach here at Rutgers. Our alumni base have been so supportive and giving to these student athletes to, you know, grow the program. I have a great athletic director in Pat Hobbs, and to see the rise of all of Rutgers athletics. I mean, our women's team, you know, made the tournament today, and certainly excited for Melissa and her girls. And it's a great time to be at Rutgers, and our alumni base, just all the student athletes on campus. And, but most importantly, happy for our guys. Our guys have, maybe like you said earlier, have been on the other side of the selection Sunday. And, I'd be remiss if, I didn't thank, some of the younger alumni out there, you know, from Scott Beter in 2016 and, you know, the 2017 and 18 and 19 teams that really were, just as instrumental of our senior class this year to, you know, make this happen. It doesn't happen overnight, as you well know, and have seen the game of lacrosse grow at all levels and certain programs grow. We've had some great players in our program and some great alumni leave the program that have been very significant to the ability for us to continue to keep on growing.
Brian Brecht, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations. Good luck and enjoy this week as you prepare for the Mountain Hawks, and safe travels to Charlottesville. We really look forward to watching you take on Kevin Cassis's team.
Thanks, Terry. I appreciate it.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.